بعد پوری دام کی جای گنگا مائی جون دی کی جای بھاگ دی کی جای تلسی مہارانی کی جای سامویت بھاگ دی کی جای
has been preaching philosophy to Indra, and now Indra is going to give his understanding about Vritrasura. This is about being undisturbed in all circumstances. Anybody here want to be undisturbed in all circumstances? Who would like to be undisturbed in all circumstances? If you don't, then this class is not for you. Indra Uvacha, Aho Dhanava Siddhosi, Yasyate Mantir Indrashi, Bhakta Sarvatmanatmanam, Suridam Jagadishvaram, Indra Uvacha, Aho Dhanava Siddhosi, Yasyate said, "Aho, hello." You can also translate "aho" just like this. "Oh, how wonderful!" Probably translate "hello." Dhanava, O demon, Siddha, Siddhasi, you are now perfect. Yasya, whose, te, your, Matihi, consciousness. Indrasi, such as this. Bhakta, a great devotee. Sarva Atmana, without diversion. Atmana, to the Supersoul. Suridam, the greatest friend. Jagadishwara, to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. What does Jagadishwara literally mean?
Control of the universe.
Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. Indra said, "Oh great demon." So he didn't put hello in the translation. "Oh great demon." And I was like surprised. "Wow! Oh great demon. Oh! Great demon. I see by your discrimination and endurance in devotional service, despite your dangerous position, that you are a perfect devotee of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Supersoul, and friend of everyone." So he's saying, "Oh, demon, you're perfect. You're a siddha. You're totally fixed. Sarva-tattvana. You're totally fixed on the Self and the Supreme Self, who's the friend and the controller of the universe. That even though there's so much difficulty, you're fixed." Was Indra fixed in his difficulty? No. Right? Indra started having some problem and he got depressed and discouraged. "I can't fight anymore. Why bother picking up my thunderbolt? It's all useless. This guy's too big of a demon." So Indra became discouraged. And Vitrasura didn't become discouraged, even though he was about to be killed. If you're about to be killed, you'd probably feel a little discouraged. But he's not. And so Indra says, "Oh, you're a demon, you're Danava, but Siddho, you're perfect." And he was seeing the symptoms of being a Siddha. Purport. As stated in Bhagavad Gita 6:22, "Yam labdha chaparan labdham, manyate narikam tata, yasmin stito nadukena, Guruna bi vichalyate." Stito. Stito means, anyone know what stito means? Fixed or place. And stito nadukhena, even in difficulty. It's not so hard to remain undisturbed in happiness, although if it's great happiness, that may be a little difficult. That's not so hard, but to remain undisturbed in distress is very difficult. And a person who is equipoised in happiness and distress, that's a symptom that either they're completely intoxicated or that they have some spiritual realization. As Bhagavatam says, the fools, the gross fools, and the transcendentalists don't feel the material pains. Established in Krishna consciousness, one never departs from the truth. And upon thinking, upon gaining this, he thinks there is no greater gain. Being situated in such a position, one is never shaken, even in the midst of the greatest difficulty. So Prabhupada here is translating the stito as not shaken. You're fixed, you're not disturbed. And there's, of course, two reasons given here from the verse Prabhupada's quoting in Bhagavad Gita. What are the two reasons that a person is not shaken in difficulty? Because they're always in what?
Fully fixed on the samadhi.
They're in samadhi, fully fixed on? Yes, or what is the word Prabhupada uses here? One never departs from the?
Truth.
And a person who is at that point thinks there's nothing greater. They're fully satisfied. Generally, in this material world, we always think there's something better. I get a nice house, and I think, well, what about that better house? I get a nice car, I think, oh, now I want a better car. How many people, not some people, but how many people are making money and they think, now I have as much money as I need? There have been surveys like that, that pretty much no matter how much money a person is making, they always want to make about 10% more. Doesn't matter what the income is. But upon gaining the truth, one thinks, no, there's nothing more. An unalloyed devotee is never disturbed by any kind of trying circumstance. Indra was surprised to see that Vitrasura, undisturbed, was fixed in devotional service to the Lord. For such a mentality is impossible for a demon. Such a mentality is impossible for a demon. However, by now, someone may think, then, that demon means body. And here he's calling him Danava. Danava means someone who's taken birth in a, has a particular type of body. So Prabhupada wants to clear up this misconception. However, by the grace of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, anyone can become an exalted devotee, Striyas, Vaishyas, Tathas, Sudras, Te Yanti, Paramgati. An unalloyed devotee is sure to return home back to Godhead. Indra Uvacha. Oho, Danava, Siddhosi, Yasyate, Matra Indrashi, Bhakta Saravatmanatmanam, Sukhadam, Jagadishwaro. Indra said, O great demon, I see by your determination and endurance in devotional service, despite your dangerous position, that you are a perfect devotee of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Super Soul, and the friend of everyone. Okay? What were Prabhupada's points in this purport? That's the first point. He quoted verse
6:22.
Mm-hmm. And what was the point of that verse? Yes. So Prabhupada's quoting the verse to substantiate what Indra is saying. Saying, yes, this is also stated in the Bhagavad Gita that a person fixed in the what? When you're fixed in the truth, then you're stito, you remain fixed, you're not shaken by any dukkha, by any difficulty. Then after establishing that, and then Prabhupada explains a little bit what that means. He said, an unalloyed devotee. So by fixing the truth, he means an unalloyed devotee. Although that could also apply to a great extent to even impersonals. Somebody who's merged into the Brahman also is not disturbed by external things in this world. Then Prabhupada makes a point about why he sang Aho Dhanava. He says that read it twice. Try. That was the third point. Regardless of what your birth is, you can still become, you can still attain this stage. So the first point was just sort of reiteration of Indra's point and a little explanation that the way you become undisturbed is to be fixed in the truth and to be an unalloyed devotee. Then you're not shaken, and anyone can attain this stage regardless of the body. What's the middle point? Why is he bringing this up about the body? The body is considered a demon, is that what you say? Yes, Vichastra's body is considered a demon, and so what? Why is Indra surprised? Why is it surprising that even a demon can be fixed in truth?
Well, he's supposed to be a material consciousness.
He's supposed to be a material consciousness. Prabhupada makes a statement. He says, such a mentality is impossible for a demon. Do you all remember that now?
Yeah, yeah.
Right? Remember that twice. We'll read it again. Such a mentality is impossible for a demon. Okay, so now what are the 3 points? The 3 points are that you are undisturbed when you are fixed in truth. Which means ultimately to be an unalloyed devotee, because Param Satyam Dhimahi Krishna is the ultimate truth. And to be fixed in truth is impossible for a demon. But this word demon does not refer to the body. And this is, we're not talking about it's impossible depending on the body. So therefore, as you said, what makes it impossible is a person's consciousness. And we have the word here, matir. He's saying your consciousness. Now, when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would give people benedictions, he would benedict them that their matir would be fixed in Krishna. So it is possible to be conscious of Krishna. And that's what Krishna's talking about, to be established in the truth, to never depart from the truth. So, of course, I haven't met anybody who is looking for dukkha, who's looking for difficulty. But as Prahlad Maharaj says, that these things, just like difficulty will come, happiness will come. Difficulty comes without seeking it. No one goes to the hairdresser and asks to have their hair dyed gray or to put wrinkles in their face. You know, maybe some psychotic people break their arms and legs, but generally speaking, normal people don't, you know, cut off their hands and break their legs and burn down their house and that kind of thing. So people don't generally go looking for difficulty. So we would like to have a life where there just wasn't any difficulty to tolerate. But considering that that's not possible, then the next best alternative we think is, well, I'd like to at least not be disturbed by it. And it's interesting that Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita doesn't talk about coming to a state where there just is no difficulty externally. And many times people think that the goal of religious life is that. They think the goal of religious life is that, you know, you've got this guardian angel walking around behind you who's your servant, and you just say, hey, guardian angel, save me, and the guardian angel saves me. You met people like that? Many people think like that. And if they do that and it works, then they become religious. Yeah, I was about to be hit by a car, and I said, God, send an angel, and then an angel appeared, and I wasn't hurt by the car. And I thought, whoa, yeah, God's pretty nice. And you find that people lose faith when there's difficulty. I remember one of my relatives said to me, religious people get old and sick and die too. So what is the use of being religious? And many people think that way. In fact, the fact that they're suffering is the only logical argument for the fact that there may not be a God, or that if he's around, he may not be very nice. So, of course, we understand that our suffering in this world is due to who caused our suffering in this world? We did. We caused the suffering in this world. It's our creation, our desire, in spite of good intelligence, in spite of good counsel, in spite of knowledge, we caused our suffering. So the devotee is not interested in asking Krishna to remove the natural consequences of their own actions. That's not what they're asking for. And we know that if we imposed some consequence on someone, we don't appreciate it if they make that request. Let's say that somebody borrowed money from you, and they come to you and say, is it all right if I don't pay you back? I don't really feel like paying you back. It's a lot of trouble to pay you back. I have to work hard. I have to do some extra work. And, you know, it's really too much botheration. I don't really like the botheration. Can we just forget about the debt? Would you be happy with that? Who would say, oh, very nice. I have a very good friend. So when we go to Krishna and we say, my dear Lord, all this karmic debt I've accumulated is really botheration. It's really like painful. It's really frustrating. It's so much tapa. Tapa means both voluntary austerity and involuntary suffering. I don't want to do this tapa. So that's not pleasing to Krishna. That's basically asking for liberation. That's saying, Krishna, just get me out of this suffering. That doesn't really warm his heart. Of course he can do that. But he said, wait a minute, that's what you wanted. That's what you agreed to. And now you're deciding it's not so good, and then what will you do? As soon as you get out of that suffering, then you'll just accumulate more debt, isn't it? Therefore, Avasuddha Buddhya, we find that one who gets impersonal liberation, they tend to fall down again. Their mentality hasn't become purified. So if I borrow money from you, or steal money from you, and I don't want to pay it back, and you just excuse me, then I may do it again and again and again. So Krishna's not so inclined to do that. So that's not what the devotee is looking for. The devotee is looking for it, no longer seeing it as a tapasya, as perceiving everything as Krishna's mercy, not perceiving things as painful. That's what the devotee is looking for, and that's one of the prime symptoms of somebody who's attained transcendental knowledge, even on the, as I said, even on the impersonal level. Someone who's in touch, even Brahmeti, Paramatmati, Bhagavaniti, Sojitai, one who's in touch even a little bit with truth will no longer be disturbed by the miseries or the happinesses of this world. And I've given this analogy so many times, but it's very, very simple. And just like this Shastra compares this material world to a dream. When you wake up, you're not generally disturbed by what happened in your dream. Generally. Sometimes we think it's some sort of sign of the future or something. But generally speaking, if someone's chasing you with a gun in your dream, you don't usually wake up and, you know, nail all of your doors shut. It's just a dream. It doesn't have any significance. And Sariputta Prabhu talks about this world as like a virtual computer game. Because the problem with the dream analogy, just like Tila King told me that she had a dream about me last night, but I didn't have a dream about her. And that's one of the ways that we know that dreams are not real. Because it's not a shared experience. There's nobody that confirms our experience. I say, I dreamt that, you know, this and this happened. And we'll say, well, I wasn't there. I didn't have that experience. But we think this is real because we're sharing the experience. If I say, you know, we went to the shop and I went with you, and you say, yes, I remember going with you. We can take photographs. We can make recordings. And other people can verify, yes, that was also an experience. So therefore, we think that this is reality. But it's just simply a shared dream. And Sariputta gives the example, and the, you see this more and more nowadays, people playing some shared game on a computer. Right? You all familiar with these things? And on the game you get your little, I think they call them avatars. You get your little person that represents you. And you get a name, and you get a form, and you get an activities, and you get a place. And you can interact then with thousands and thousands of people in this imaginary game. And it's a shared experience. You can talk to your friends and say, I killed the demon, or whatever they do, and I jump off the cliff, and everybody can say, yes, I saw you do that. And some of these games, you can build houses. I have some devotee friends who play these games. And they say how they build houses, and they decorate their houses, and they, you know, make money. One of my friends told me, he said, the reason that I play this game with my wife is this way she won't push me to buy a big house in the real world. She can buy a fancy house and all of her clothes in the game, and she'll leave me alone. But how many people, some people get upset over these games, I've seen. Sometimes, you know, people are yelling and screaming and throwing things. What happened? Oh, this thing happened to me in the game. It's just a game. So if one is situated in truth and knows it's just a game, what is this thing on the computer? It's just, what, if you look at the hardware, then you're looking at electricity, little bits of plastic, little bits of metal. Right? There's not really monsters and houses and money. It's just electricity and plastic and metal. And if you look at it from the point of view of software, it's just what? What are these games in terms of the program? Ones and zeros. It's computer code. I don't know what the modern code is. My husband used to program in Fortran. I don't know if that's still around. Basic.
It's a binary.
Binary. But all, it's ultimately all binary, whether you're using Basic or Fortran, or I don't know if you use COBOL anymore. It all becomes just ones and zeros. Just ones and zeros, just two numbers. And from two numbers, this whole fantasy world is real. That when people are playing it, it looks very real. So someone who's established in truth, they're not shaken. If you were to walk in some place where everybody's playing these video games and they're all glued to their computer, they're feeling happiness and they're feeling pain, but you're in truth. You know, it's just ones and zeros. It's it's just electricity, and you're not disturbed. The demon chasing the person in the stream doesn't bother you. The pot of gold in the stream doesn't elate you. You're established in truth. You see truth. So similarly, one who sees truth, one who's awake, we think of our waking conscious state as being awake. It is not. It's a dream state. When we're awake, we see it's just the modes of material nature, as Krishna says. Just the modes are active with their object. And the soul is doing, what does Krishna say the soul is doing? Just observing, nothing. Observing and desiring. Exactly like the people in the video game hall. They're just sitting. They're not really doing all the things of their character in the game. They're not eating. They're not decorating their apartment. They're not making money. They're not killing a monster. They're just observing. And we are also just observing and desiring and nothing more. This is a play of the three modes, just like three colors combine on a screen, or the two ones and zeros combine. And it's creating an illusory play that is a shared experience. Of course, it isn't a totally shared experience. My experience is going to be somewhat different from yours. So one who's established in that truth is not disturbed. Now, so even you could see an impersonalist could be at that point. They could see, you know, actually, really, everything, sarva kalam idam brahman, everything is brahman. This is just the interaction of the modes of material nature. I don't have anything to do with it, and I remain undisturbed. Now, the problem is that that state of being undisturbed, first of all, you can't artificially imitate it. And why does Prabhupada say, we're going to ask this on both levels, because I just talked about the impersonal level, why does he say that this mentality is impossible for a demon? Why can't a demon even get realization that this is just the modes of material nature working and I'm aloof from them and everything is just ultimately Brahman or truth? Right? Why is that impossible for a demon to come to that point?
It's bad association, all of his hearing is about materialism.
Everything's about material. So right, that those thoughts can't stay. When you're in touch with materialistic persons, they're telling you, this is really important. It's really important that you have a nice house. It's really important you make a lot of money. It's really important that you kill the sin. This is real life. Can you imagine if you had some friend in a computer game who was telling you, this game is real life. Don't let them tell you that life outside the game has any meaning. Don't leave your computer screen even for a moment. So that's what materialistic people are saying. Become absorbed in the illusion. Anyone who tells you there's something besides the illusion, you know, they're just some religious fanatic, or they're just hallucinating, they got some bad wiring in their computer. And it's because a person has a desire to enjoy. If I have a desire to enjoy the game, I can't see it as an illusion. I can't enjoy something that I'm thinking is just ones and zeros. There's no pleasure in it. Does that make sense? So as soon as I have a desire to enjoy it, I must be an illusion. It has to be. I can't enjoy it from the platform of reality because it's not enjoyable. Just like, you know, when you're a little child, you can have, like, these little children there. You know, you can have plastic food. You ever have plastic food when you were a kid? And plastic plates and cups and, you know, you're playing that you're eating. And the children are enjoying it. Where they're in their fantasy world. And then all of a sudden, when we hit like 12, 13, 14, it's just not pleasurable anymore. Just like, why would I want to pay with a piece of plastic bread? Why do I want to, you know, go zoom, zoom with my little metal fire truck and drive a big, real fire truck? You know? I want to play with the toy. So as soon as you see it as a fantasy, there's no pleasure in it anymore. It becomes just foolishness. But the demons want to enjoy. The definition of a demon. They want to enjoy. Therefore, its detachment is impossible. So that's on the level of impersonalism. But the detachment of impersonalism, as we sang, is not going to stay. Why? Because Ananda Maya Vyasat, we are pleasure-seeking by nature, and the happiness of impersonalism is not fully satisfying to the soul. Just being detached, just being peaceful, just being equipoised is really nice for somebody who's suffering in the material world. But it's not where you want to stay forever. And I'm not sure if I told this example here, but when I was in high school, when I was in secondary school, I had a group of friends, and one of them, Stephen, was his last name. Anyway, he was in love with this girl named Lynn. And for 2-3 years, they were completely in love with each other. And one day, Lynn said, bye-bye, Stephen. And we never saw him. You know, at any of the gatherings of all the friends, all of a sudden, Stephen was gone. He didn't talk to anybody, he didn't associate with anybody, he didn't do anything with anybody. But we would wait at the same bus stop for the bus to school. And one morning I said, hey, Steve, how come we never see you anywhere? He said, I never want to be around people for the rest of my life. And then after I moved into the temple and I got married, when I was going to get married, I sent invitations to some of my old friends. And he happened to be in the town. So I sent him an invitation. And he showed up at my wedding with another girl. So that's the problem with impersonalism. You know, you get some, oh, people are painful. People are painful. No, people are painful. All right, no people. And how can you stay that way? At least you'll start talking to the squirrels, right? Start talking to the trees or something. And just to stay on that platform of just, you know, it's not natural for the soul. So to be undisturbed in all circumstances forever, one has to come beyond just again. Just, you know, it's just the three modes of material nature, it's all temporary, this is just the world of names. You know, I was reading a thing from this one impersonalist who was saying, you know, when there's pain, I just see it as an interesting energy vibration in the body. Oh, that's interesting. Actually, I've had personal experience of doing that, of being able to detach the mind from the body and just experiencing pain, not as pain, but, oh, that's interesting. Oh, look at that. That's just some action of the body, just some action of the modes of nature. Very interesting. Everything is perfect. Everything is how it's meant to be. Everything is just spirit. But beyond that is what Indra is describing here, Suradam Jagadishwaram. That the reason Vidrasara is equiposed is not just because he sees the unreality of material pains and pleasures. It's not just because he sees the truth about material nature, which is jnana, but he's also seeing the truth of spiritual nature. You know, many times we get articles submitted for Back to Godhead, where 9/10 of the article is about how foolish the material world is, and 1/10 is about how wonderful Krishna is. Because it's very easy to understand that the material nature is not really pleasurable, and that it's not really what it appears to be. It's just a world of names. You know, this is a board now, and before that it was a tree, and after this it will be soil, and it's just, that's easy to understand. But we find that just understanding that is not enough to keep us detached, is it? Is that enough? No, because we want to enjoy. We want to have relationships. We want to have things that are pleasurable. We want to have things that are exciting. So one comes to see the ultimate truth, the supreme Atma, as it's said here, the Atman, the soul of the souls, who is the Surida, the best friend, and the Jagadishwara, the controller of everything. If I see that not only is material nature not what it appears to be, Maya, it's not what it looks like, but also that there is a supreme truth that is my best friend and is controlling everything. If there's somebody who's absolutely controlling everything, and it's a fully, totally benevolent person, then nothing is bad. There's no such thing as bad. From the material point of view, it's all bad. There's nothing good. as Krishna Das Kaviraj says, you know, you're good, bad, because from a material point of view, it's all foolishness. But from a spiritual point of view, everything's good. So one is then rejoicing not in getting money or getting a house or getting this or that in the pretend world. One is rejoicing in Krishna. Or as Krishna says in the sixth chapter, one's relishing and rejoicing in the self, which dismantles people's false ideas of humility, of hating themselves.
Oh, I hate myself. I'm so terrible.
No, Krishna just said, you're relishing and rejoicing in the self. And you're relishing and rejoicing in him and how wonderful he is. Then there's no question of being disturbed by apparent sufferings. One sees both, that this material nature is just the modes of nature. It's just a world of names. It doesn't have any reality. It's not really touching me. It's just a game. And here's Krishna running everything. And he's running everything perfectly. And he's benevolent. He cares about me. And then one is happy to pay back one's karmic debts. One's happy to take responsibility. Tateni kampan. One says, yes, whatever I have to suffer, fine. Krishna's using this suffering to purify me. Krishna's going to use this to bring me to a state of awakening where I can see truth. I'm not just paying off a debt in the game. And then one comes to a certain point where one does see the truth, and then you really don't have to pay off your material debts anymore. Masuja, no fear. One can walk away from the game. And if someone's in the game and saying, hey, you owe me money in the game, say, sorry, I'm quitting this game now. I'm not going to play on and on and on and on to pay back all of my debts in an illusory world. So that's how the devotee becomes detached. They're not asking Krishna to liberate them from their own karmic debts. They're not asking for that. They're asking to be liberated from illusion. They're saying, I want to see truth. And when you see truth, then you have to pay your debt. Krishna asks you to pay your debts. Krishna asks you not to pay your debts. Doesn't matter. Krishna says, you know, please take care of this karmic debt. And it becomes happy. Oh, I'm doing it for you, Krishna. I'm going through the suffering for you, for your glory. And if Krishna says, forget about this karmic debt, you know, it's like, but I owe Duryodhana. He made me the king. I have to pay all my debt. Krishna says, forget it, Masuja. Sarvapa, baby. I'll take care of all these debts for you. Just forget it. Surrender to me. And in that situation, whatever difficulties one encounters in Krishna's service, Bhaktivinoda Thakura says, are great happinesses. Just like even materially, if I have to go through a lot of trouble to make you a birthday cake and I love you, that's happiness for me. I'm enjoying that. I'm enjoying doing the shopping. I'm enjoying baking the cake. I'm even enjoying cleaning up the kitchen. Because I'm doing it out of love for you, so there's no suffering. I'm doing things out of love for my friend. So our idea is to get detached. Of course, we are also using jnana, but we're not trying to become detached primarily through jnana. We're trying to become detached primarily through devotion. Thinking, I'm doing everything for Krishna, who's my best friend, and who's controlling everything. Right? So Prabhupada's making the point, again, we'll just go through this. He's making the point. The first point is that one is detached if one is established in the truth. And this mentality is impossible for a demon, because a demon wants to enjoy the world. And certainly a demon doesn't want to see Krishna as the best friend and the controller either. So it's impossible for a demon, and demon does not mean the type of body. It means the mentality. It means the mentality. So how does one become detached from suffering through knowledge? One sees what? The world as just modes of material nature. As a world of names, as a dream. Is not having anything to do with me. Is not being really of any, of in and of itself, it has no consequence. And how does one become detached from suffering in the ultimate platform? Can one stay detached on the impersonal platform forever? Very difficult. Almost nobody can do it. Pretty much, we say, you will fall from that platform. How does one become ultimately detached? You see Krishna as your friend. And what I'm doing for my friend. If I have to take some trouble for my friend, that's my happiness. If my friend asks me to pay back my debts in the game world and set a good example in the game world so I can preach to other people in the game world, then I do that, and that's my happiness. And that way a devotee becomes detached and never shaken either, even in the midst of the greatest difficulty. So this is one way we can judge our own advancement, and also in this case, this is how Indra could tell. This guy looks like a demon, but he's really a great saintly person. He's really a siddha. Rupa Goswami also warns, we cannot judge a person just by appearances. You know, just because somebody's Indian and has a long beard doesn't mean that they're necessarily an enlightened being. It has nothing to do with the body. It has to do with the matir. It has to do with the consciousness. So we should very actively desire to be free from illusion. We should actively desire to see the truth, to see how Krishna is everywhere, he's controlling everything, and he's our best friend, and that any desire to enjoy puts us in a world of illusion. That we should be very eager to, but we should not be so eager to be free from the suffering on the external platform. That will actually impede our advancement towards truth. The mentality of the devotee is, Lord, as long as you want to keep me in this world, and as long as you ask me to pay back karmic debts, I'm happy to do that. I'm not asking for release from that. But I want to be connected with you, and I want to see things as they are. I want to see things as truth. I want to be awake in the truth. Why do we ask to be awake in truth? Just so we won't suffer? Because someone who's awake in truth doesn't feel suffering when they're suffering. Why do we want to be awake in truth? Why does a devotee desire that? Why does a devotee want this illusion to be dispelled? It definitely pleases Krishna. How much relationship can you have with a sleeping person? Can you have much of a relationship with someone when they're sleeping? Not much. It says in the Bhagavatam that the Lord wakes up the illusory energy. Prabhupada gives the acharyas give the analogy. It's just like a man wakes up his wife for enjoyment. So Krishna wants us to wake up. He wants to enjoy with us. He's eager to talk to us. Prabhupada says Krishna is much more eager to speak to us than we are to listen or to speak to him. He's anxious. When will I get to talk to the soul? When will I get to play with them? When will they push me on a swing? But in a sleeping state, the kind of service we can render is not really very significant. So Krishna very much wants us to wake up, and he wants us to want to wake up. Just like the parents, they want their children to turn off the computer game and join the family for dinner. Right? Now some man who's always watching sports, and the wife says, can you please turn off the football game and be with us? So that's Krishna's mood. He's saying, can you please turn off the illusion and come be with me? You haven't had dinner with me for a long time. Your place at the table's been empty. So the devotee is eager for it. Because Brahma Bhutta Prasanatmana Sochachina Kanchachi Saman Sarveshu Bhuteshu Mad Bhakti Mabhate Param. The devotee wants to attain an awakened state, not because, oh, wow, in an awakened state, I won't feel any of the miseries of the material world. You won't feel any of the enjoyments of the material world either, from a material point of view. But the devotee wants to be in an awakened state, because only from that platform can I start really having a relationship with Krishna. Before then, it's all just practice. And in that awakened state, nisarchatina kanchati, I feel I've gained everything. I don't need anything else. And I don't lament about anything because I see it's not the reality. Now, how do we come to that state? Sounds pretty nice, huh? Everybody like to be awakened, enlightened, being, to see truth. How do we do that? Devotional service. We practice the activities of an awakened being. We practice the activities of an enlightened being. What do enlightened beings do? They chant Krishna's name. They cook food for him. They make garlands for him. They tell other people about him. We copy that behavior. We practice that behavior. How else do we become an enlightened being? One thing you don't do is sit around waiting for enlightenment to kind of fall on you. How else does one become awake and siddha? That's the word here, siddha. By serving those who are enlightened. Yes, definitely. That is how Krishna's mercy is invoked. If someone is already enlightened and awakened and they say to Krishna, hey, would you wake this one up too? I think they really want to wake up. Krishna says, I'm not sure if they really want to wake up. Sometimes they tell me they want to wake up and sometimes they tell me they want to stay sleeping. But that's how we get Krishna's mercy. Also, that's how we get the inspiration. As we see people who are actually in the truth, and we say, that's really nice. They're doing a lot better than I am here sleeping. I think I'd like to wake up also. And conversely, one gives up association with those who want to stay in the dream. If you want to get free of some intoxicant, of addiction to some intoxicant, then you don't associate with people who are taking the intoxicant. You associate with sober people. So you become convinced, oh, sober people actually have a lot more fun than intoxicated people. So I said to one person that if taking intoxication is a symptom that you're not happy. You have to get some kind of artificial happiness. So one, asat sangatya, one gives up asat, that which is not truth. One gives up people who are associated with falsity. Okay, how else does one become an enlightened being? By following their instructions. So those who have seen the truth, what does Krishna say? Tadvani Panipatena Pariparshana say Upadekshanti Teyanam Gyaninas Tattva Darshina. Tattva means truth, darshana means to see. And Krishna says that you take the instructions, you serve, you inquire from someone who sees truth. And they'll tell you how you can also see the truth. It's pretty simple, isn't it? Any other ways? Hear about it. Hear about what is the truth. Hear about the real nature of this world and the nature of reality. Now that hearing process pleases Krishna, so he cleanses the heart. Krishna then starts peeling away the illusion. As you hear about reality, then Krishna starts clearing your vision. Chaita Dharpana Marjanam, it's clear. And one starts to see, oh, it's just a bunch of ones and zeros. It's just, you know, goodness, passion, ignorance. What happens, by the way, sometimes when Krishna starts clearing things and a person starts saying, hey, it's all goodness, passion, ignorance, it's all just the laws of nature. What sometimes happens to somebody? Yeah, they become frightened. And they run away. Well, that also sometimes happens. And that can happen in greater or lesser extents anywhere as we go on this path, on this bhakti marg. And Krishna shows us more and more the nature of truth. So we can say, ow! Or we can go, whoa. I don't know if I want to see that. So another thing we can do, as we hear, is to respond rightly as Krishna shows us truth. Because what does Krishna tell Arjuna after he shows him the truth? Now you deliberate on all this and you do what you want to do. It's our choice. You can go to someone and say, hey, I see you're eating a meal in your game, but there's a real meal sitting on the table in the other room. This is just a game. And then the person has to choose. And they have to say, yeah, I think I'd like some real food. Or they can say, don't bother me, I'm in the game. Don't tell me it's just a game. So we're making that choice, my dear friends. When are we making it? Did we just make that choice billions of years ago when we left Krishna? When are we making that choice? All the time. At every moment, we, the soul, are saying to Krishna, keep me in illusion, keep me in illusion, keep me in illusion, keep me in illusion, keep me in illusion. Or wake me up, wake me up, wake me up, wake me up. So the main thing we have to do is to desire to wake up. And why don't we desire to wake up? We're comfortable in the situation and we're scared. We're scared. We think, well, at least I have a house in illusion. Like, I got my house and my money in the game. If I turn off my computer and look around at the real world, I may have nothing. Better a computer-generated house than the house at all. And I see that some of those enlightened beings also seem to suffer a lot. But when one is awake, one does not experience material suffering. The suffering is just interesting. One's not feeling pain as pain or pleasure as pleasure. So therefore, we have to advance in faith and courage. So that also will help us to become siddha or perfect, to increase our faith, to increase our faith, to increase our faith. And to ask Krishna regularly, please give me the courage to ask to see the truth. Even in ordinary dealings, like somebody may come up to you sometime and say, could you tell me what my real problem is? And you're thinking, I wonder if they really want to know the truth. Have you ever had an experience of telling somebody the truth and that person just gets angry? Who's ever experienced telling someone the truth and the person gets angry? Have you ever experienced that? So we can do that with Krishna also. Krishna can tell us the truth and we just get angry. So therefore, we need to have courage to face the truth. And why not? Why not? What do we have to lose? Just ones and zeros. And what do we have to gain? We have to gain an eternal life where we're swinging Radha and Krishna, throwing flower petals on them. We're just reading Krishna Bhavanamrita. How Radha and Krishna like to swing this swing, but we're swinging them, they're facing forward. But often Krishna and Radha swing on a swing where they're facing each other. And as they're swinging, Krishna's garland touches Radharani, Radharani's necklace is touching Krishna. And Radharani is saying, don't swing too fast. So, of course, what does Krishna do? He swings faster. You ever have that experience in your life, too, with Krishna? So Krishna's swinging faster and faster and faster and faster. And so Radharani's ornaments are flying off. And eventually he's swinging so fast that what happens? She just holds on to him. And of course, that's very nice. Krishna likes to play the hero. That's his pleasure. Right? And then all of Radharani's friends stop the swing and they get off, and Radharani's complaining about Krishna. He swings too fast. One of you get on with him. And as they're swinging, the demigods are singing and showering flowers, and everyone's throwing flowers and singing songs. And then Krishna and Radharani get on a swing with many, many, many different swings. And all of Radharani's friends also, they also have a swing. And each of them thinks, Krishna's only swinging with me. So that's where we belong. Why would we want to be absorbed in ones and zeros when we belong? So thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. You can have just a few minutes for questions, comments, corrections. Yes, please.
How do we have the tendency to
becomes a what?
And it could be an impediment. But if it's a natural tendency or ability, I mean, to some degree it's all right to not want to suffer in the ways. So if we're put into a suffering condition, is it wrong to see like that, to tolerate that type of thing?
So you're saying to alleviate suffering through Gyan may be an impediment? So is it wrong to use Gyan to help with our suffering? No, as long as it's part of our, as long as it's not the only thing that one's doing. Anyabilasita sunyam gyanakarma anavritam anukulena krishna nishivanam bhakti ritam. So Rupa Goswami is saying once you have no material desires and gyanakarma anavritam, neither gyan nor karma should cover bhakti. He's not saying you don't have any karma or gyan. He's saying it doesn't cover bhakti. So we have activities in bhakti and we have knowledge in bhakti. And we find that Shastra, Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita, Chaitanya Charitamrita, is telling us both. It's giving us both the detachment. Gyan means detachment. It's giving us both detachment from the world and attachment to Krishna. If you try to alleviate suffering only with detachment, it will not stay. That's the point. Of course, at a certain point in development of bhakti, detachment is just a concomitant factor. Usually, for most devotees in the beginning, jnana is very prominent. It's almost a what? Yes, if you can do that.
But then it seems that one can become complacent about it.
Complacent about?
Well, not to find further understanding and see it in the devotion.
When knowledge of the material world comes naturally, then you're talking about somebody who's really seeing everything as Krishna. They don't have to cultivate knowledge of the material world's illusion separately. It comes very naturally, so that wouldn't lead to complacency. It wouldn't lead to complacency. But a person who's at that point of devotion, they're studying Gyan from a very different point of view. They're studying Gyan as part of their saying how wonderful Krishna is, not for their own detachment. It's a very different mentality. Like I was just reading, I think it was in the description of the autumn season, where Krishna's looking around and just thinking, you know, wow, I really have a nice energy here. And everybody appreciates that. Everybody wants to be told, oh, you've done this, you've cleaned the temple room very nicely, or look at your beautiful garden, or look how beautifully you made the garland for Prabhupada, or how neatly you wrote the verse on the board. Everybody wants appreciation of their energy. So does Krishna. So the devotee was just thinking about pleasing Krishna. When he sees how the material nature is working, he just says, wow, Krishna, that's really interesting. It's really interesting how when I break my leg, these little electrical impulses go to the brain. And I'm not being facetious. I'm really serious that someone who's awakened experiences pain like that. Just like, you know, you have a light turns on in your car and you see, oh, look at that. What an intelligent engineer. When it's low on oil, a light turns on. Isn't that interesting? So that's different than someone saying, you know, it's just electrical. Okay. It's just electrical impulses going to the brain. That may be detached. You can do that. But that's quite different. That's on the, it's a self-centered, and it's one is still wanting something for themselves. So that's often common in the beginning.
So as long as one is seeing that tends your ability in connection with Krishna, appreciating as Krishna's giving that more, then one will get the proper result.
You see everything in relation. relation with Krishna, and everything in a way of glorifying Krishna, even the difficulties. Oh, Krishna's so kind. He's decided it's good for me to pay off this debt, and he's making an arrangement for me to do it. How kind he is. Now, look how the material nature is working. What a clever engineer he is. That's different than this gyan for the sake of liberation. Then liberation is automatically achieved. We're naturally liberated. It's possible, Prabhupada says in teachings of Lord Kapila, for anybody, any ordinary person, anybody here could do that mechanically, temporarily. It's not impossible at all. Anybody can learn how to take their mind out of normal, wakeful consciousness and put it in another state of consciousness where you perceive the material energy more as it is in a mechanical way. But if we have a desire to enjoy the world, we can't stay there. Can't stay on that platform of just mechanical detachment through gyan, because we want to enjoy. And then as soon as you try to enjoy, then you're experiencing the pleasure is pleasure and the pain is pain. But the devotee sees that the pleasures are Krishna's wonderful arrangement and the pains are Krishna's one, and they experience everything as pleasure. And personally, you experience everything as just sort of interesting. Oh, that's interesting. But the devotee, they're experiencing everything as joy. The pains is joy, the pleasures is joy, and everything is joy. Why is it hard to do this? It is hard to do this. Why is it hard to do this? Because we are attached. To being an illusion. And it generally takes a long, long, long time. Just like I'm sure any of you who preach to new people have the same experience. People who are just coming to Krishna consciousness, and I just had somebody last night say this, the same kind of thing to me. She says, I don't know what to do when I go to my relative's house. They cook food with onions and garlic. And I don't want to offend them by not eating it. And I'm afraid that if I take initiation, if I take shelter of a guru, then I won't be allowed to eat onions and garlic anymore. And I might offend my relatives. Now, I think to most of us in this room, that fear is absurd. But was there a time when that kind of fear was not absurd? Can we remember a time when that sort of fear was a very real fear? And I hear this sort of fear, you know, depending on the culture, from new people all over the world. Well, if I become a devotee, then I'll lose my friends in secondary school. They won't want to hang out with me. I remember one girl in Bahrain said that to me. If I take up Krishna consciousness, I'll lose something in the illusion, is the essence of it, right? I'll lose something. I won't have, my family won't love me anymore. My friends won't love me anymore. If I become a devotee, how will I get on at work? How will I have the enthusiasm to make money for my family? These are the beginning fears. I don't think any of us have that fear anymore, but we have other fears. And just like those fears seem very foolish to us, you're afraid your mother won't like you anymore if you don't eat her onions and garlic, and you're thinking your whole life's going to collapse if you don't eat onions and garlic anymore. You know, it's just so petty. We already went through all this, most of us, with our family. And the same way, those who are further on the path than we are see our present peers like that. Oh, you know, this will happen, and that will happen. And someone who's actually advanced devotee looks at us and says, how petty. How foolish. So that's why it's so hard to do this. Because we're afraid. We don't have the courage, we don't have the faith. If I just saw everything as the modes of material nature, then where would I get any pleasure? I wouldn't get any pleasure. Life would become meaningless to me. So that's why it seems to, for most of us, it takes a long time. If someone can have full courage and full faith, then immediately you say, okay, fine. Krishna, get rid of the illusion. And I've said many times before, don't say that if you don't mean it, because we'll show you don't mean it. But if we get to that point, we'll say, you know, forget it. I don't care what happens. So my mother won't want me over at the house anymore. Whatever. I'll do it. And then Krishna's anxious. Oh, great. You can come back and eat with us. Is that all right? Is that all right? Or are you still... No. Something else you want to ask?
Amen.
Anybody else? Yes.
Krishna explains that my pious sort of immunity has been practicing yoga and takes food from a popular family, devoted family. So how is it that persons such as Vitrasura and Sri Palani are obviously very highly elevated with immunity, taking food from
Most statements of Shastra are general, not absolute.
So that's like an exception. But also there must be a reason for it, also. Like nothing comes by chance.
Yes, well, we're talking about... of course, there's interesting stories about Pramod in his past life. And Vitrasura, there was a particular story where he was cursed by Parvati, which was good for him because he was attached to being a demigod. Being a demigod and traveling around with the Vijayanagara ladies wasn't good for his Krishna consciousness. It was better for him to be a demon, in a demon body. So Krishna's ultimately what's going to do, is going to do what's best for that particular soul. So when Krishna says, suchinam srinatam gehe, that's a general statement. Krishna's not saying every single devotee is going to take birth in that kind of family. Nor is he saying everybody who takes birth in those sort of families are devotees. Sometimes, you know, like Maharaj Vena took birth from Unga. So sometimes demons take birth from saintly persons, sometimes saintly persons take birth from demons. So that's why a point that I emphasize over and over again, one has to look at Shastra as a whole. And you see that there are stories of exceptions. You know if something is absolute, if there's no exceptions, if something is explained that way all the time by everybody and there's no counterexamples. When you find something that's explained one way in this circumstance and another way in that circumstance and there's various examples, then you can understand. That's a general statement. Is that right? It's why it's important to study Shastra as a whole. And it's very important when other people throw quotes at you to look at the context. If someone says, here, this is, you know, scripture says this, or Prabhupada says this, always look at what is the context. All their other examples. Take as a holistic. Okay, thank you very much. All the grace to share. New Varshana Bhaktas Deed.